Because of coronavirus restrictions, millions of cars are no longer on the roads. The skies are comparatively free of airplanes. In fact, many human activities that cause both air pollution and the release of planet-warming greenhouse gases have stopped or scaled back. Does that make a difference in the air we breathe now and in the future of our climate? NewsHour Weekend's Christopher Booker reports.
In early March, NASA released some startling satellite images comparing nitrogen dioxide levels in China before and after the coronavirus lockdown. The first, compiled between January 1st and January 20th, shows the world's second largest economy chugging away at full steam. The second, compiled between February 10th and February 25th, shows the same economy in a near standstill. The reduction in nitrogen dioxide, the noxious gas that comes from cars, power plants, and industrial facilities, was dramatic. Suddenly, the choking air of major cities became easier to breathe. As other countries have hunkered down, does the slowing of emissions also portend a respite for global climate change? Those who have built careers studying and analyzing the atmosphere say, well, maybe.
We've looked at that over the last month, and it's possible it's a tiny bit below where it might otherwise have been, but there's enough fluctuations that are natural that it's hard to say for sure that it's deviated.
Ralph Keeling is a professor at the Scripps Institution of Oceanography in San Diego.
It's like turning down the tap on a bathtub, and you can see the tap is turned down just by looking at it, but it takes a while to notice that the level of the tub is filling more slowly. If it persists, we'll see it, but it takes a little while before the ripples calm down and you can really see the level changing.
Keeling's father, Charles David Keeling, developed the famed Keeling Curve, a daily reading of atmospheric carbon dioxide levels collected on the Mauna Loa volcano on the Big Island of Hawaii. It provides a record of global CO2 emissions.
The record starts in 1958, and it shows very dramatically and clearly this oscillating pattern and an overall rise. So it's a really beautiful indicator of how the world is changing with respect to carbon dioxide.
Looking back at any historical comparisons, which of course are somewhat difficult, how might this period compare to, say, the 2008 recession or other major seismic events that maybe altered the atmosphere?
Well, if you go to the 2008 economic turndown, I think the global reduction in fossil fuel burning was at the level of 1% or 2%. Out of the total. So it's actually rather small. Now, I expect that the reduction in emissions this time around will be substantially larger than that.
What happens when we return to, if we return to, business as usual, when people start flying again, when businesses start traveling again?
Yeah, I mean, if the economy comes back, we'll be sort of back where we were before, except for, you know, lessons we've learned or patterns of behavior that have changed. So, and I think this is mostly an experiment in human behavior. The natural world does not respond to changes in greenhouse gases on a monthly or yearly time frame. It's really responding on decadal time frames. So there's no real shock from the change in greenhouse gases on the natural world. If we come out on a different trajectory, then in 10 years hence, we'll be in a different place.
I actually think that there's a lot that we can learn from this experience.
Dr. Philip Duffy is the president and executive director of the Woods Hole Research Center.
And in the case of climate change, there is this false argument, this false dichotomy of, well, we have a choice between having a safe climate and a healthy economy. And in the case of climate change, I know that that's just wrong, that it's just the opposite. In fact, the only way to have a healthy economy is to have a safe and stable climate.
Prior to joining Woods Hole, Duffy was a senior policy analyst in the White House Office of Science and Technology, where he helped formulate climate policy in the Obama administration. Do you think this period will in any way alter the political conversation that surrounds mitigation efforts?
Well, I hope it does. I think the most valuable lesson is listen to the experts. In the case of climate change, the experts have been jumping up and down about this for decades. This hasn't gotten any traction, and I suspect the fundamental reason is that it's hard for people to grasp that could actually happen because we've never seen anything like it. And yet COVID-19 is an example of the unimaginable can happen. Here it is. I mean, we knew theoretically this was possible, but nobody on some emotional level, I think people didn't really believe it. We must not have because we weren't ready for it. And here we are.
While the U.S. and much of Europe remain at a standstill, China has started to ease restrictions. Cars are back on the road and people are going to work. And as this animation from the European Space Agency shows, nitrogen dioxide levels have started to return as well.